You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The Dear Friends of the Dear Friends podcast may be experts on musical theatre, but they are not behavioural experts, and their advice should always be taken with a grain of salt. Their theatre recommendations, on the other, those are pure gold. Without further ado, the Dear Friends podcast. Dear Friends, spill your woes to your musical family. Dear Friends, we'll take your questions and turn them into nuggets of wisdom and anecdotes in an otherwise cynical world. Dear Friends.
Hi, I'm Dear Friend Emily.
I'm Dear Friend Christy.
And I'm Dearest Friend Jess. And welcome to Dear Friend, a write-in advice podcast for the musical minded. It feels like it's been too long and that I'm a little out of practice with this. My God.
I know, right?
We've had a couple of hiccups over the past couple of weeks, but we're back.
Hey, we've never missed a post date. I will say that. We've always got our episodes on time.
Yeah, true.
We're back to the core crew.
We're back. We're back to the normality. No more guests
just
for a bit.
Just the three of us.
Three amigos.
We love our guests, but we want to just have some bonding time with the original trio. So, yeah, we don't need to explain the show. How about we just dive into the first question?
Yeah,
Emily,
I'm so
you're
ready.
Up first.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm glad this one's for me. All right, this is from Jay, and Jay asks us, how many donuts is too many? My dad has been making batches of ponchki because he's trying to perfect his recipe. I don't know what ponchki is, but that sounds amazing. My mom's currently on a diet, so it falls to me to eat all the leftovers. They are tasty, but there's like a dozen donuts per batch, and I don't like wasting food, ..
Okay, oh first off, God. I looked this up. Ponchki, they're basically like, you know, filled donuts. Like you can
you
put
guys
like
not know what
jam
ponchki
or
is?
Cream or, you know.
Is that a Midwest thing? It's like
what?
That a Midwest
It is very,
thing?
It sounds Polish. Is it Polish?
It is
it's Polish.
Polish.
Yeah.
And that's a
and
very big thing in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Okay,
and apparently
sense.
They're very huge around Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras, which
nice.
We're taping this right after Ash Wednesday. So that just,
yeah,
that came
so
up.
So good. They're so good, guys.
Oh my gosh. Well,
like go to an actual Polish shop and get one. They are the most delicious thing. They will destroy your diet for a week,
yeah.
But my God.
How many donuts
but,
is too
yeah,
much?
First,
I mean, first of all,
abundance is a good problem to have.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I shouldn't lecture anyone about their eating habits because my eating habits are absolutely the worst.
No.
I eat absolute garbage. But I'm fairly certain you shouldn't eat more than a donut a day. I don't, to me, donuts are, I'm not a big donut person, but when I have them, they're like a splurge. Like I might have one or two, but then that's like one or two for like months on end. See, I just eat like bacon every day and that's what I want to eat. But like, I don't want you to waste food. Freeze them. That's what my mom lives by is freezing food. My husband too. Also, when I worked at Alice's Teacup in New York, I mentioned it on the show before. They made these amazing scones. And they bake them fresh every day. So at the end of the day, you have to get rid of them. So our chef would just donate them to the food shelter after every
Absolutely.
Day. Consider donating some of those donuts. There are people who
Absolutely.
Need them.
Absolutely. That's what
Send
that's
to your
my
friends.
Thought, you know.
Yeah, your
it's
friends.
Like, you know, the best thing
True.
About food is that you can share it. So yeah, share some with your friends, share some with family. Unfortunately, we are still not doing church services in most places, but if you have like a religious organization you belong to, they usually have coffee hours and would like love snacks.
Yeah.
Any volunteer organizations.
Yeah. It'd be neat if like if you haven't been seeing your friends in a while and maybe if you can't see them, you could like drop off little deliveries, like wrap up the little donuts and like
of
drop
course.
Them off at
yeah.
their doors, like and say, I miss you. Like, I think there's a lot you could do with it, but freeze some because, you know, times is hard and everything's crazy and like Texas is frozen right now and like having
oh
some
God,
food
yes.
in your freezer ready to go, it's never a bad thing. But maybe,
right.
maybe if you don't want to eat the donuts, don't eat the donuts.
But if you do want to eat the donuts, don't feel shame in eating the donuts either.
Eat all
right,
the donuts.
Right.
If they're delicious and you love them. But like, you know, again, you guys would know more about this than I. I'm not a big stuff the stuff in the donuts, oozy gooey stuff in the donuts. So to me, that sounds like way too much. But
well, the poonchki is kind of like a limit. It's not as much as a jelly donut. It's just kind of like a mini filling because it's mostly about the dough.
See, that's what I like. Mm-hmm. I'm more into that, the dough, than than the filling. But I feel like you shouldn't be like shoving 6 donuts in your face a day, right? Like that doesn't sound healthy. And like diabetes wise. Yeah. But hey, you know what? Eat what you want to eat. I'm not going to tell you to, you know, eat what you want to eat. But I think there's a lot of really good stuff you could do. And it's so cute that she's like making these donuts all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool that your dad's, you know, studying this new skill. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's and your dad. Sorry. Yeah. The mom's on the diet. The dad is making
them. Mom's on the diet. Sorry. Dad's doing the cooking. And breads, anything that has yeast in it, it's like, the recipes are so simple, but at the same time, it's so difficult to get right, that balance of the flour and the water and everything. So,
yeah,
I get that. So, yeah, definitely, you know, share with others. Do a call before you're going to drop anything off, though, because some places might have rules about what they can accept, schools in particular, because of allergies. They have a lot of, you know, they say, you know, packaged foods only. But I'm sure, you know, if you talk around to people who know, you'll find plenty of people who will happily take donuts off your hands.
Yeah, like check into like homeless shelters or missions, rescue aid kind of societies. That's the rescuers. But
or even to like hospitals, donate it to the workers there. They always appreciate
that. Again, check to make sure they're cool with it and that it's not like violating any allergy restrictions. But people who need it right, people who need a little love right now, you know, first responders, teachers, people in small businesses.
Give them all the donuts.
Spread the love.
Time
food
to make
food
the
is a great
donut.
Way to spread love. Yeah.
And as someone that's been like dieting for about a year now, just go and tell your mom she's beautiful because, you know, when you're dieting, you kind of need to hear that.
Yeah.
And if all else fails, maybe tell your dad that maybe while he's practicing, he should do like a half batch.
Yes. Yeah. You're like, Dad, I love you, but please, my heart.
Yes.
My cholesterol, Dad.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't want it. This is great, but it's not worth the insulin bill.
Right.
Okay. All right. Songs. I'm going to go first because I've got only one and I don't want any of you to steal it. And maybe you won't. And this is going to be from Sondheim's very first show called By George. And it's I'll Meet You at the Donut, which you can find on the Sondheim on Sondheim album very briefly. It is cringe and funny, and it has the word donut in it.
I'll Meet You at the Donut?
Yeah, which was like the center of the school, which was George's school.
Oh, sure.
Which is what...
Yeah.
Yeah, we all get it.
The
it's
donut.
Great.
I get it. Who's next?
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to go with... it's just something that popped into my mind while we were... while I was thinking about this. But I'm going to go with Blankets and Beds from Come From Away, which is, it's, you know, when you get past, you know, all the anxiety of the people who are, you know, just experiencing 9/11 as it is happening, what it's about is, you know, all these people, you know, coming together and, you know, giving what they can and dealing with this crisis in a very positive and affirmative way. Also has one of the, I think is the most underrated joke in the entire show, where the news anchor says that the Lions Club needs toilet paper. And then later she comes back and says, please do not bring any more toilet paper to the Lions Club. Because that's what people do. They hear about a need and then they respond and it gets to be too much.
Okay, well, I'm going to go, the complete opposite of that sentiment. And I'm going to go with Jonathan Larson's stupidest song that he probably never wanted us to ever hear, Sugar from Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah.
He had no say in the matter. But honestly, it's just what plays in my head a lot when I think of stuff with sugar in it. But
All right. Christy, you want to read the next question?
Oh, absolutely. This is from Sharon, and she says, Dear friends, what is the weirdest thing in a show that has made you cry? Not the hardest you've ever cried, something that surprised you and made you cry as a result. I don't know, I cry at the drop of a hat, so that's going to be a long list.
I have two that stick out in my head very strong from my life. The first was when I was like 15 or 16 and I saw Ragtime on tour. And that, of course, I cried multiple times during that show. However, the one that took me off guard was Gliding. When she's like, Tata, Tata, and then he gets her back from the train and she's crying and he's calming her down. I don't know why, but that moment made me like insta cry. And then the other time that really hit me that was like out of the blue was when I was living in New York, I saw Passing Strange at the Public. So I saw it before it went to Broadway. And that's when it was like, it's not really the round. It's like a thrust stage. It's like all, it feels like you're kind of in the round. But the audience, the actors coming in through the aisles a lot. Anyway, so, you know, there's a part in the second act near the end where the mom dies. And I thought that would be where I cried. But it wasn't, it was when the youth defiantly looks at his future self and he says, I'll live in vans crammed with guitars. I'll sleep in vans and play in bars, whatever that line is. That part where he was like, fuck you, I'm going to be an artist. Or sorry, where he's like, screw you, I'm going to be an artist. Snip, snip, snip. that part, I remember that made me cry in a way that like Sunday in the Park with George makes me cry. Like that way where you're like, I can't even, it's that artist thing, that creativity thing where you can't explain it and it just blah. And that show was so funny because I got to see it because it started at Berkeley Rep and my some college friends worked at Berkeley Rep and so they hooked me up with tickets to go see it in New York. And little did I know, my future husband was with that show a lot because he was dating Rebecca Jones at the time. So so like we both were in New York at the same time and like really like obsessed with this show. And like then when we got to get, you know, then when I met him years later, it's like, what's your favorite musical? And he's like, oh, it's this show called Passing Strange. I was like, oh, whoa. So it's just kind of this funny, like, oh, twists of fate, ships passing in the night type thing. I think it's kind of cool. Anyway, those are my two big answers.
Christy?
Oh, geez. There have been several. I mean, I remember bawling through the entire tour of Once, and that's weird because I don't remember anything specific that made me cry. It was just something, you know, about the music and story and my place in life that was just, you know, floods of tears. I think the one, you know, that probably, you know, caught me most off guard because, you know, I had listened to the cast recording before was My House from Matilda, which, you know, it's a very beautiful song about, you know, how Miss Honey has this little place that's all her own. And then, you know, the ghost of her dad comes in and starts singing to her. And, you know, when you see it on stage, I was just like,
yeah. Oh, so good. I love Matilda.
That's so good. See, this is where I have to, like, go into, like, my emotional issues.
My emotions!
Yeah. Well, it's not even that. It's more like, ever since I, like, hit puberty, I don't feel things as deeply as I did. Yeah, I know. but ever since that happened, I have not cried in about 10, 15 years, despite having the emotions that are like, oh, this should lead to a release, but it doesn't. And I also just don't get angry, so like things like that.
You're
weird.
Perfectly in the middle. You feel it's no it no also extremes. Makes me, the opposite.
Well,
of
that
bipolar.
Also makes me feel numb at a lot of things, which is scary. Like when my pet died, and I'm like, oh, I feel nothing. Or grandma dies, and like, oh, I feel like nothing, and all that. So that's when it gets like, oh, am I a bad person? Am I a sociopath? But a sociopath never asked that. But so I'm diving.
I think you deal with it in a different way. Everybody does. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I'm the exact opposite. You know, I will cry for any reason and no reason. You know, I mean, you know, I hate to do the PMS cliche, but you know, there's about a week of the month when literally anything will, you know, set me off.
I'm a frustration crier. I get when I'm so frustrated and like overwhelmed and things pile on top. And then it's that one mm-hmm. other thing where it's like,
oh, yeah.
Like I frustration cried once at the 34th Street station in New York City because it was the middle of summer and it was so freaking hot and there's no airflow. And I stood there staring for the train and it wouldn't come. And like a total crazy person, I just started frustration crying on the platform.
Oh, no. You know, that happens.
In
you
New
know,
York, yeah, there's always, it's that, what is that yeah. sack lunch bunch where they're talking about the woman in New York who, on the street crying? That is a yeah. the white lady crying in the street. That was me at, like once a month in New York City. So,
yeah. I mean, that's, it's, you know, that tends to be like a mom thing sometimes,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, the kids are fighting and, you know, work is being stressful. And then sometimes I'll just like see like the dirty kitchen floor and start bawling.
Is there like a musical moment where you could hear it out of context completely and just start crying? Like just hear that song, like not even sit through the whole experience of the show and just it makes you tear up.
Probably, you know, the finale of Les Miserables when they start in on Do You Hear the People Sing just
yes.
very quietly. You know, that just thinking about it, I'm like, oh my God.
Seeing that live and like having the wall of noise coming at you by the end, you're
yeah.
just like, you're feeling everything and nothing all at once. It's so incredible. My God.
Mm-hmm. Those marching ghosts.
yeah.
And the movie just does not live up to that moment, like, at all.
No, not quite.
But I did want to actually tell my thing back from like before hitting puberty when I was little baby boy. This and it also goes with the teen angst side of it. It was Left Behind from Spring Awakening, like broke me when I first heard that because I there was a lot of pressure for me as a child to like do good in school and get good grades, and like anything below an A was thought of as a failure and like active mm-hmm. punishment for that. So that was like a real high pressure situation. And now I use absolutely none of my academics because I did YouTube as a child mm-hmm. and I taught myself how to do that. So that was more effective learning for me. So Left Behind was a big one for me.
Spring Awakening, you should only get into it when you're like really young and
yes.
you're feeling your emotions at 11 all the time. Because
yes.
like I got into, I mean, I remember getting Spring Awakening and I was in my, I guess I was in my mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to it and I thought it was going to be all rocking out songs and it was a lot of, instead it was a lot of angst. And I was like, I might have missed the cutoff to feel this.
Yeah. I think, you know, it plays very differently when you are a parent. You know, my boys are not Oof. Quite at that age yet, but it's coming up sooner than I want to admit. But yeah, you mentioned Left Behind. You know, when I hear that, you know, I think of, you know, am I, you know, doing everything I can as a parent? Am I failing
yes.
them in a way that I don't even understand?
Ugh.
And I think that's, you know, the way I approach that that entire show now is, you know, what am I? You know, how is what I'm doing affecting, you know, my children and maybe in ways that I don't understand.
Yeah. Got to be carefully taught.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we did our songs in our answers is the thing. So I feel like we don't really need to go.
Yeah. Should we officially say them, though? I want to so officially
okay.
say them.
Mine is okay. Left from Behind from Spring Awakening.
Okay. And mine is Passing Phase from Passing Strange. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I did My House from Matilda.
Excellent.
Three great songs.
In the
wow,
middle
was...
of our street.
My house.
Wrong song.
I know. Anyway.
I'll do the next one because okay. this is from a mystery. They didn't give us anything. No name,
ooh,
no pronouns.
Anonymous.
Just a question.
Mystery.
I've noticed that when my loved ones are stressed, my first instinct is to pull away. The excuse I give in my head is that I'm giving them space, but really I have no idea how to help them, and I'm afraid of making things worse. Is there any way I can overcome this mental block, or small steps I can take to actually help and not stress them out even more?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it's going to depend on the person. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a weird inclination to want to, first of all, I tend to do that too. Like, you need space, I'll give you space.
Right.
And then sometimes there are people who, you know, don't know how to articulate kind of what they need. So, yeah, I would say when in doubt, ask, what can I do for you? If you're not in a place where you feel like you can't do that for them, I mean, you really can't go wrong with just kind of saying, I'm sorry you feel that way. Or just being an ear for them. Sometimes sometimes someone needs a mouthpiece, and sometimes they do need to be left alone. And I think just maybe not overpower, not going the opposite way and being like, what do you need? But just making it clear in your words and or your actions that you are there for them when and if they might need you, and just communicating that.
Can I help is a, you know, very powerful phrase, I think.
Yeah. Can I help?
Yeah.
Do you need my help?
That.
What can I do for you? And if they don't know, you could be like, okay. Like, you could even just be like, you know, I'll get you a glass of water, I'll put it right here, and I'll be here when you need me or something.
Yeah, maybe they just want to hide under the weighted blanket for an hour or two. So, you know, yeah, give them that space. But, you know, and maybe they want to talk, or maybe they want a hug. Maybe they just...
And also, you know, don't discredit the ability of a distraction. Like, even, like, if they have the stress, like, because I know when I'm stressed, the last thing I want to think about is the things that's stressing me out. So try to be that calming presence that isn't a reminder of what's going on in their life. I find myself in that role very often, where I'm like, all right, we're going to find things to distract you from the bad thing going on in your life and make this a better day somehow.
Yeah, I mean, all of these are really good tools, and it's going to vary from person to person and situation to situation. So the fact that you want to put yourself out there to help is a good thing. And like Christy said, you know, can I help? How can I help you? Just making that clear. And if they go, I don't need your help, I need to be alone, then you have your answer, right? Like, you're set. Sometimes we live in this wonderful world of technology, and if it's a family member and like it's your sibling or something and they're in the other room, you could just shoot them a text and be like, you okay? Like, that's pretty easy to do. Sometimes the person doesn't even need you to talk about it. They just need someone to be there. Maybe they just want to watch TV or something, and they just want someone to be there with them. I mean, there's just so many options for this, but just ask. I guess this is the running theme of our show when people ask us questions. Communicate, baby. Just ask
communication,
questions.
Communication, baby. Yeah.
Questions are great. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking questions.
I love it. I feel like you guys are giving such good answers today, and I just love hearing them. My God.
We try. Thought about it a little bit.
Like, I'm just here to, like, regulate things. I'm just like, wow, good answers from those two. I guess on that note, we got to go into some songs. Christy, do you want to start us off?
I guess I will. And it's, you know, more romantic than friendship. But what I thought of was I'll Cover You from Rent, which is just a great song about just being there for someone that you love.
It's so cute. I love it.
I love that.
Emily?
Hold on. I think I... Okay. Yes. I think I wrote my answers down wrong. I want to make sure I'm giving the right one. Okay, yes. So I would like to suggest the ultimate, like, being there for someone during a hard time song, You'll Never Walk Alone from Carousel.
Yes.
Now, it has a very similar vibe to Climb Every Mountain. However, I think You'll Never Walk Alone is more apt because... it's all about, it has the same vibe, like you're going to get through this, but it's coming from an angle of someone giving sympathy during a hard time. And it's just a really, really great song.
Yeah. Climb Every Mountain is more like, come on, you got this. Yeah. Go out there and, you know, conquer the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, You'll Never Walk Alone is like, yeah, it sucks right now, but you're going to get through
it. Yeah, it's coming from like a bleaker place, I would say.
Right.
Yes. Until the finale, where it's like, oh, Billy Bigelow goes to heaven. He didn't walk alone.
He didn't. No. Figured it all out.
He had a lot of help to be a normal, functioning human being, you know?
He was amazing.
He was.
Anyway.
All right, actually, can I write my pitch for you for my film adaptation of Carousel and see if y'all approve it?
Yes.
I got one in the back of my head that I, like, want to do, and now I've got two. You're my two producers right now. All right. So we trim it down, cut down a lot of the domestic violence stuff, and make it an actual problem play, and cast everyone's problematic fave, Seth MacFarlane, as the lead of Billy Bigelow.
Yeah.
Because he's already got the New England accent down.
He doesn't have the vocal range. He's crooning into the microphone. I can't hear him doing salutes.
Do you remember who originally played Billy Bigelow in the movie before quitting on the second day?
Oh, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, that would be the Sinatra
version. Yeah, but then they got Gordon McRae, so I mean, that was like a step up.
And plus, Frank Sinatra was an actual
Jones.
Movie star.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane is. What are you talking about? He's directed 3 movies and starred in all of them.
Oh, God.
All right. My song, more seriously, is the finale to Next Normal, Light, which is all about helping others. This is the first thing I thought of, where literally the lyrics are like, some ghosts are never gone, but we still go on, and you find some way to survive. Like, that is, like, a good
and
way
that's
to,
a,
like...
You know, that's so appropriate, because that entire show ends with everybody's still a little messed up, but they're working through it.
Aww.
I don't even know if anyone's better off at the end. Maybe Natalie. Maybe Natalie and Henry are a little better off. I don't think anyone's like super happy.
I think
by the
kids
time
are
going to
be
ends.
Better off. They'll be better off.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I feel like Henry's falling into the same like enabling traits that Dan fell into.
Well, knock on wood, they don't get married or anything.
Yeah.
They're still kids.
Anyway.
I don't know. Yeah. You could get her pregnant in college and then settle down, you know, the way that all works out.
Okay.
Speaking of getting pregnant in college, let's go into a mid-show announcement and hear some ads.
I'm going to go get pregnant.
Hey. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Folks, how are you enjoying the show so far? It's been a lot of fun. Christy and Emily got a lot of fun things to say, don't they? I'm just here to ask you if you'd be willing to leave us a review on iTunes and also leave us a rating, because we're a brand new show and the algorithm is very much helped by your ratings and reviews. And also, if you could, just send it to a few friends and then they'll send it to a few friends and it's just a pyramid scheme into us becoming the most famous podcast on Broadway Podcast Network. And you love pyramid schemes, don't you? I wanted to give a little bit of credit here in the mid-show. Our theme song was created by the amazing Robin Nash of IOUMusicUK.com. She's amazing, and if you have interest in getting your theme songs made that sound as incredible as that, go check her out. IOUMusicUK.com. And also, our show is an offshoot of Someone Else's Problem, created by Aaron Chalakian and Delaney Peterson, who gave us permission to steal their show format and allowed us to revamp it into what this show is. So thank you to Aaron and Delaney. And if you're enjoying these first episodes and just want more of these advice musical theater content, why don't you check out their episodes? They're still up and running on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all that. Get some more musical theater advice content. And if you don't quite have enough of Emily and Christy, you can find them on their own YouTube channels. Find Emily at Stealing Focus, and you can also find Christy at Musical Hell. They do wonderful content, and you'll learn stuff at the same time. And I also have another podcast called Musicals with Cheese, where I try to show my friend Andrew that musicals are great one musical at a time. And you can find that on the Broadway Podcast Network. And you can catch all three of us on the musical theater Dungeons & Dragons show, Once More with Dragons, hosted by Tommy Nolan of Musical Theater MASH. All right, guys, I think that's all we have to say here. Let's get back to the show! Hey, we're back! Hope you enjoyed those pregnancy commercials, I'm sure, were in there.
Oh my god.
Christy, do you want to read the next question?
Oh, sure. Okay, this is from Trevor, and he says, "Dear friends, my friend and I have written stories for a couple years now, but lately I have been worried that they're just going with my ideas because it makes me happy. And I am worried that they might not be having fun in spite of their insistence. Should I put my ideas on the back burner and go with their ideas for stories for a while?"
Write your own stories at this point.
Again, I think it would be a good idea to talk to your writing partner.
Yes.
But, I don't know. Is this a truly a collaboration, I suppose, if it's
right.
just your ideas, or is it you working as, like, say, a showrunner, where someone is working to flesh out the thoughts that you have? If it's supposed to be pure collaboration, like both of you working on ideas, then maybe that's a conversation you need to have if they're feeling weird about it. If you have no interest in writing your partner's stories, then that's another thing. Is it worth it for you to kind of bite the bullet and kind of do right by them because they have done the same for you? I'm not quite sure where you're coming from with it. But on the one hand, yeah, like Jess said, you know, you should always write your own stories. But I don't know, maybe you could do that on your own and maybe you can work with this person on another project too. I mean, you can certainly work on more than one project at once. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
I think, you know, it's something that you have to self-evaluate on based on like what you're saying, the expectations of the project and how you've been contributing to it. So, you know, just think about, you know, your last few writing sessions. You know, do they have space to talk about their ideas or are you talking over them? You know, if you really feel like you're monopolizing the conversation, you know, you can just say, you know, what do you think about this? And then, you know, obviously really listen. I mean, this is a huge cliche that I hear all over the place, but you are given two ears and one mouth for a reason. You listen twice as much as you speak.
Yeah. Yeah, like you shouldn't just be like playing music in your head while the other person is talking.
I'm unfortunately like that.
Wait for my part.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is, and I've found this to be true my whole life, is sometimes you just evolve past your creative, partners or you move past it. Like, and that's not really a bad thing. You know, working in this creative outlet with this person, its time might have come. You might have grown past it. You might be moving on to another phase. Maybe you got everything you needed out of that, and now it's time for you to move on. I mean, I've worked with multiple theater companies like that where I get really involved with them, and then I kind of move on to another one, some that I've stayed with for a long time. I've had projects that I've started that I've passed on to other people because I hit the point where I was like, I'm done. I can't kind of put all my energy towards this anymore. Like I have a group that I started called Play Club and we were doing weekly free readings of plays and screenplays, all kinds of things for like years and years and years and years in Hollywood. And I was putting all of my energy into it. And a lot of people were doing it for a while. And then after a while, it was like kind of cycling back on itself. And I was at the point where I was like, I'm not getting anything out of this anymore. I've gotten everything I can get out of this. But there was this new batch of people who had come through who were like, I really want to run this and I really want to do it. So I said, here, I give it to you, my children. And I check in on them every once in a while and they're doing great with it. And it doesn't mean I don't love my time with it or that I'm not proud of it. It's just that like I did it and I moved on. So that could be something you have to think about. Like, is this phase of this relationship over? And that doesn't mean you still can't be friends. It doesn't mean whatever, but maybe you even just need to take a hiatus and just figure out what both of your goals are. What do you guys think? Let me look at this again.
Also, like your friends, I've been in a situation where I've found collaborators that just wanted an excuse to hang out together and weren't really there for the creative process, but was down to help whatever they could. And that's a wonderful relationship to have, and it just isn't maybe the most creative, inspiring relationship, to be honest. So friendships who collaborate are kind of weird. is what I'm saying. I'd rather collaborate with strangers sometimes because they're going to bring out the honesty.
Yeah, I've had a mixed bag with both for sure. Because wow. I've definitely collaborated with my friends, but sometimes it does put a strain on things, especially if you start out seeing eye to eye and then you evolve to the point where you don't anymore.
100%.
Yeah, I think what you're feeling is not wrong. I think you need to just pinpoint what it means for your professional relationship with this friend.
Right.
So maybe ask them, like, hey, are you mad at me? You know, I think it would be good. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always good to have pushback. Like, I'm writing something right now with a writing partner in COVID that we do, like, Zoom meetings every week to talk about what each of us has brought to the table. And there are healthy debates, and healthy debates are very useful. They are super useful. Disagreements mm-hmm. are wonderful. You come to such gold with them.
Yeah.
So it is something that you need, and if he's not given that, y'all need to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you could try going with their story ideas. Like, why not? Like, have them pitch right. if you just feel kind of creatively stagnant with the two of you, or you're feeling like vibes mm-hmm. are weird. Be like, okay, let's actually try to write one of your ideas. I mean, I feel like that's true collaboration. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want that, that's okay. You just need to be aware and upfront with it.
All right, we ready for some songs?
Sure.
Gotta bring it up. Bring up the energy. Come on.
All right.
Okay. Songs.
Okay, I'm gonna go first. I'm yes. gonna go with the song Growing Up from Merrily We Roll Along because it is kind of about collaborative friendships and what happens when you start evolving through them and maybe even past them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Christy, you're up because Emily didn't totally take my
I'm going to go with Why We Tell the Story, the finale Aww. From Once on This Island, because, yes. you know, it's a great song about, you know, why you're passionate about storytelling. And at the end, you know, it's passing the story on to somebody else.
I love that song.
You know what? That's a good one. The only one that one popped in my head is A Cheat, and it's about the breakdown of a partnership, and it's Franklin Shepherding from Merrily, which is, you know, the only other choice I could think of that's really fits the situation. That's the only one, like, about, like, a composing, like, pair that I can think of, too.
I mean, I guess title of show.
Ah, yeah. Come on. That isn't really, like, as dramatic. There's not as drama.
Not as, of course there's not as much drama. You sang that for my virtual cabaret. Mm-hmm. Franklin Shepherding, right? No, you didn't. Wait, you did
no,
it for something.
I did. You got trouble.
No, you but did, wait, you trouble, did Franklin yeah. Shepherding for something, though. I thought I heard you sing it for something. Am I going crazy? I'm going crazy.
I think you're going crazy.
Maybe
I'd love to sing it.
I think maybe you just mentioned that you liked it or something. I'm going crazy.
That was
going
to be my alternate, if not You Got Trouble. But You Got Trouble, Alex Jones, was so funny to me that I decided to go with that.
Yeah, that's true. That was pretty damn great.
That was a fantastic take on the piece. I loved it.
What a jerk. Anyway,
like, because I know I'm never going to pull off the Harold Hill. I got to bring the insane, like, conspiracy theory side. I'm no Hugh Jackman is what I'm saying.
Huge Jackman.
All right, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Who's reading this next question? Because it's between you two, and I forget who I just did.
I read the last
so
one.
So I'll do it, I'll do it.
Emily!
Okay, this is from Tobias. And Tobias says, for years, I write as a hobby and creative outlet. Novels, short stories, etc. But for some time now, especially since the second half of the pandemic, I find myself unable to focus on writing. While I have some new ideas and want to write, every time I actually sit down, I lose interest and concentration, which frustrates me because I want to do something creative. Do you have any advice on how to motivate yourself and get your creativity back?
Everybody wants to ask us about creativity.
There's so many.
Are we, like, super creative?
We are super creative. Yeah, I mean...
Have a good cry, listen to music, go outside for a walk.
Well, I think, you know, what you have to understand is, you know, being creative is just, you know, the act of creating something.
Right.
So if writing is not happening for you right now, maybe you just need to do something else to get past that block, you know, bake a cake, do a drawing, you know, pick up a craft kit from Joanne's or Michael's or wherever. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, even something good or something that you expect to share with the world. Just make something. And
yeah, or if you've got an idea for something, like, start doing some research. Just start reading a book about the subject, or jotting down vague ideas that fly into your head. You know, the process of creating isn't just, I'm creative. In theory, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it as well.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Lin-Manuel Miranda came up with Hamilton while he was reading, you know, the Cherno biography on a beach somewhere. I mean, you know, he didn't just sit down and say, you know, I'm going to write the next Pulitzer winning musical. He was just, you know, chilling and reading a book, and suddenly the light bulb went off.
You know, I've had a couple friends in the pandemic start these, like, Zoom group gatherings where it's like low-key create, like, there's one where it's like an hour of like reading time, and you could be reading anything. Mm-hmm. And then I have another friend who has like a writer's room one, where it's not even that you're all talking and collaborating, it's that you're all setting aside this time with your friends virtually to either just sit and read or to write. And just setting aside that time, even if just writing the most silly ideas or just researching, maybe it still counts. I also think getting inspired will do it a lot for you, like just watching some stuff, listening to some music. A lot of times I'll get an idea for something by just like scrolling online or something like that. Like, sometimes creativity comes out of nowhere. And I also think, if you're stagnant for a little bit, especially during a very stressful time as this, I mean, that's okay. I've definitely had these phases.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
If you are hitting the wall as we are, you know, coming up on the year anniversary of this thing, that is normal. Okay. Do not beat yourself up about it. We have all been there, are there, you know, it's happening.
Yeah. And I think you're gonna come out of it. It's not like you're never gonna get a creative idea again. Like, you're just like, your brain has stopped working. No more creativity for you. Like, I think it's okay to take that time and just let the downtime happen and be okay with it. And then it's gonna hit you like a bolt out of the blue.
I think it's worth bringing up that sometimes changing what your creativity is directed to can, like, help your creativity or inspire something new altogether. Like, me and Andrew, I don't think I've ever told the story how me and Andrew started Musicals with Cheese. He and I wanted to write a musical just for fun, and then I realized he hadn't seen any musicals, and I'm like, well, now I gotta show you some. And then the podcast was born. And we stopped working on the musical and just focused all on the podcast, because now that's found a way to be successful.
That's what happens, yeah.
It honestly is. That's how the things you never expect to be successful are the things that end up being more successful, as dumb as that is.
Oh, yeah. Like, I didn't even know either of you existed a couple of years ago. And then all of a sudden,
and now we're all in each other's business.
I know. Yeah. And it's because Jess reached out to me for a thing, and then then we were all talking online, and then Tommy reached out to us for a thing, and then and then it just kind of snowballed from there. And now we have.
I like the Tommy thing was me falling like under it and being like, "I'm grabbing you two while I'm going."
Here we go, dragging us down.
All right, you're coming with me, though.
I mean, you know, the whole reason why I'm even here right now is because, you know, I was, you know, sitting at home with my kids, and I said, you know, I'm just going to, you know, make a YouTube video, you know, talking about some dumb musicals.
Yeah, and just you know, Christy and I are rehearsing for Julius Caesar right now, and I managed to pull Christy out of her long hiatus from the stage.
Yes. It's not. I'm going to be back on the YouTube stage.
Yeah. So I think, opening yourself up and Yeah, your friends, your connections are great. Going back to our last question, sometimes having a collaborator, sitting there with someone to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, go back to something old. I mean, if you loved, like, finger painting as a kid and you haven't done it in 20 years, get out some finger paints, make a mess. Have fun.
Yeah, yeah. And it's okay. Like, the creative spark will return. And if it's not here right now, then it's because your brain needs it. I would say.
Yeah.
That's incredible. My God, you guys are so, so cool. Every week I know it's just me, like, y'all are so cool.
We're so cool.
But I'm going to do song first, because I got one right at the ready, on a rare occasion. And this is going to be Hard to Be the Bard from Something Rotten. All about, like, how hard it is to, like, kind of get that steam to write up something good and something great. Mm-hmm. And eventually he writes Hamlet in the end by ripping off someone else. It's great. Just rip off other people.
Well, I mean, that's what Shakespeare... We were talking about that during rehearsal. You know, Shakespeare, you know, was, you know, plagiarizing, you know, before plagiarizing was a thing, but... He borrowed from a lot of people.
Yeah, Pyramus and Thisbe. Who heard of it?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the final epic from Hadestown. I think that's epic 3. I think the numbering changed between versions. But yeah, it's just, you know, the story's about Orpheus, you know, trying to find this song throughout the entire course. And then right when he needs it, it's there. So.
And talking about... finding that one song that would bring you glory. I would like to do...
I'm picking Tango Marine.
I'm doing a song that Jonathan Larson is probably actually very proud of, which is One Song Glory, which is, you know, about wanting to find that one thing that's going to define your life, that one creative thing that's going to... Yeah, you know, stand for you for forever. And I think it's not so much that everyone's going to get that. It's more that every artist, I think, can relate to that feeling. Like, what is my opus?
I think everybody relates to that. You know, it's like, what am I going to be leaving behind?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Roger is obviously a bit more urgent because he has HIV. Yeah. But that's the ultimate existential quest.
Yeah, children and
ultimate
art.
Existential children question. Art.
Yeah, I was gonna do a Sunday in the Park with George, but I was looking at our old past playlist, and I was like, we've done a lot of Sunday in the Park
because a lot of people ask.
I know, so yeah, I wanted to mix it up a little bit. Yes, listen to all our previous playlists for inspiration.
Yeah, I was about to say, they just want us to use, like, putting it together and stuff. Like, that's it.
I know. It's too perfect. The art of making art.
About to say, this is a very Sondheim Jonathan Larson heavy playlist this week.
Yeah, I think so. We have a good mix of stuff. I don't even know. Is I'll Meet You at the Donut going to be on Spotify?
It's on the Sondheim on Sondheim album. Oh, good. So you'll have
Note
to look
to self.
That.
Yeah.
Which is the only reason why I know it. He, like, cuts it off. He's like, that's embarrassing. We're not talking about that.
Yeah.
There's like a recording of it on YouTube or something.
Yeah, the 19th Sondheim Broadway review.
That's the best one, though. It is the best one.
There's so many, I know. I'm a sucker.
What's your favorite Sondheim review?
Oh, Putting It Together. I love Putting It Together.
Oh, definitely.
I love the original cast album with Julie Andrews and Rachel York. And then I saw it in high school at the Taper before it went to Broadway. Mm-hmm. With all the original cast, except instead of Ruthie Henschel, it was Susan Egan. And so that was freaking great.
Yeah, and they've
loved
got the
it.
Video with Carol Burnett and John Barrowman.
And Carol Burnett was there, and she did the ear, and I was like,
yes.
Ah!
And it's got a great blooper where she loses her skirt.
I've seen that. It's amazing.
Look it up on YouTube.
Oh, it's so good.
John Barrowman just loses it and hands
absolutely.
It up for a good 10 minutes.
Oh! I just remembered the whole reason why I like Putting It Together. God, I can't believe I forgot about this. My dad directed or worked the crew or stage managed. He did something for a Black Box production of it when I was pretty young. And I remember, it must have been like 12 or 13. And the only Sondheim I really knew at that point was like Into the Woods, you know, maybe a couple things from like Company or something. And then I remember seeing that show and being like, oh my God. And I just loved how it all worked for this, like, because he's so good at writing these like middle-aged couples all standing around with like martinis and talking about life. Like, it's a perfect show for that because there's 9,000 songs he has for it. So it works in a review. But I did Side by Side by Sondheim, and that's like the worst one.
Wow.
Sorry, it is. It's really dated.
I mean, yeah, but like, where does Marry Me a Little fit in your guys' ranking?
Well, that's cut songs, baby.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that a review? I'd count that as a review, wouldn't you? It doesn't really have a story.
Yeah. As far as I know, there's four. There's Marry Me a Little, Sondheim on Sondheim, Side by Side by Sondheim, and Putting It Together. Yeah. I like Marry Me a Little. I love the Sondheim cut songs. Some of them you listen to and you're like, yeah, that was cut for a reason. But
and sometimes you're like, yeah, this is a really cool song.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you guys feel? Here's an actual question of like my generation versus your guys' generation real quick. That most people my age is first Sondheim is Sweeney Todd just because of that Tim Burton movie.
You know,
it could be worse.
It could be worse. Yeah. When I would go to the Ren Fair and cosplay as Mrs. Lovett with Jeff as Sweeney, a lot of times that's how kind of 20-somethings would recognize me. They'd be like, oh, my God, I love that movie. There's way worse movie musical adaptations. It's so middling. Like, to me, it's just, like, right there in the middle. Like, I don't think it's worst thing. I don't think it's the best thing.
Yeah. I think it leans a little bit higher for me just because it is so stylized, so the music doesn't feel as jarring.
Yeah, and they had to adapt it. They had to adapt it to the medium, just like how they had to do with, like, Chicago.
Honestly, I think Tim Burton had, like, a fantastic aesthetic for it. You know, it's this grim, industrial, you know, Victorian nightmare. With all, you know, and all the blood all over the place, the way, you know, the way Turpin dies, I think that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, like...
I think about the alternate universe version with Gary Oldman as the lead, directed by Sam Mendes, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd enjoy that.
I do wish the movie did Anthony and Joanna better, because I do think
Joanna... Oh, yeah, God, yes.
People always dismiss Joanna, and I'm like, she's a sheltered, crazy shut-in who's like...
She freaking shoots the asylum owner.
And she's... Of course she's crazy. Her father figure is lecturing after her. Of course she's
really
loony. Like, and so I feel like there's a lot of fun in them when your actors are really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I think Joanna has a darkness in her that a lot of people don't appreciate.
Yeah, that Marry Me Monday, all that stuff, that fast stuff she's doing, like, that's by design. She's not a Flibberty Gibbet. She's crazy. I mean, she's like a little loony, because of course she is. It's like, it reminds me of Rapunzel and Into the Woods, frankly. Mm-hmm. Like, if you went through the stuff these characters went through, of course you'd be a little nuts.
A little nuts, yeah.
Yeah, and I think if your actors are just, if it's just like community theater, throw it away, we got a soprano, then whatever. But if you've got a good actor who can also sing those parts, then that's like when they really transcend, I think. Mm-hmm.
There's so many Les Mis sequels where it's like, what's Marius and Cosette up to after the events of Les Mis? No, I want the Anthony and Joanna story. What's their next step?
I mean, you know, that had to be a seriously dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, it's like, so she goes like, wait, so this guy who almost killed me was actually my dad, and this crazy woman who's here the whole time is actually my mom, and now he's grinding up his butt. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot to discover in a day.
Would Anthony stay with her and be a supportive person, or is he just so dumb and like, yo, yellow hair, I'm Victor Garber.
I know.
That's a very good
question. Victor
Garber
and his mutton chops, bless him. He's so cute. Anthony is another one that can be really interesting if you play it right, because I think he has a bit of a hero complex. He doesn't know Joanna. He's just... kind of like, I want to be a hero and I want to do right.
He's in love with the ideal of
her. So it'd be funny to see what happens, like, to be confronted with all of that stuff. And
the
then,
baggage.
Yeah, because there's that moment in the second act when everything is, when all the shit's hitting the fan and they're running around, and then she's like, she stops to be like, we would marry me one day. That was last Thursday. Kiss me. And he looks at her like.
Yeah, that was last August.
Yeah. That was last August. Yeah. And then he like looks at her and then like pulls her along. And I feel like that's a moment where you could be like Anthony going, oh. Joe Bluth moment, or zooming in, I've made a huge mistake. Like, that would be really interesting to tackle.
I'm going to commission this. I want a sequel to Sweeney Todd written. Come on.
You have a creative block. This is your inspiration moment here.
Go
for it. Yeah. You got a creative writing project right now. Go for it, kids.
It could be called Anthony and Joanna. Or just Joanna, exclamation. Joanna, exclamation.
A new musical.
And it's a picture of her, like, looking crazy and him being like. shrug.
Anthony's not even a character. She left him after day one. It's all about Joanna going to like Paris and whatever.
Oh, she runs off with like Toby. They escape and then they go have adventures.
Oh gosh, yes, I want to will this into the universe, please.
I actually really love how they do Toby in the movie, though. I think that's an improvement.
Yeah,
because I do like that he's pretty young. Mm-hmm. I think that adds a lot, and I think the kid who played him was really good. I remember
he outsang everyone.
Oh my god, he was so good. Yeah, I do like that. It's fine. There are worse ways to introduce.
And honestly, you know, if it's honestly, if it's the way you get into musicals and the way you get into Sondheim, it's good.
There you go.
I mean,
you might get into it and be like, "Oh, I want to see more of what this guy has done." And
yeah, exactly. don't underestimate the power of the Gateway Show.
Exactly. That's kind of how I put it in like my video. Frankly, I'm like, look, if you're a theater person, I know theater people who hate the movie of Sweeney Todd because they love the musical so much because it's a it's an actual masterpiece. And the movie was not made for them. It was made for another audience to make it more accessible to them. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't take away from the stage version because we still have the pro shot and we still have a million.
We have multiple.
Oh, my God.
Pro
and that
shots.
Show will never die. There will always be Broadway revivals. There will always be.
Yeah.
And because it's
opera
so.
Companies.
Exactly. Because opera companies can do it because it's so big and operatic. So it's always going to be around.
Okay, my girlfriend has a problematic opinion. She had only seen the movie in like a little bit earlier this year. I showed her the George Hearn pro shot with Angela Lansbury. And her response is, it's good. I hate the ballads. I don't like the ballads. I want them cut.
Oh, I can't relate.
Yeah, I can't relate.
I get why they cut them from the movie because it is very Greek chorus. It is very theatrical. Uh-huh. And I do like how they kind of adapted the ballad for the like opening credits. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I miss them. I do miss them. I get why they're not there, but oh man, I love those ballads.
I'm just sad we didn't get Christopher Lee singing the ballad of Sweeney Todd. I mean, come on. That would have been so many shades of incredible.
That would have been great.
Anthony Head was supposed to be like one of the Greek choruses.
That's why he's in the show for like 10
seconds.
That's
right.
God. You know, he's got one line.
He's got
line
like a cameo.
To Johnny Depp, and that's
What happened was, I read the original script, John Logan's script, and they were going to shoot the ballads because they were like, oh, might as well shoot it. Then Johnny Depp's daughter got sick, so they couldn't shoot it, and they had to rearrange their entire schedule.
Right.
But it was originally going to be like these ghosts haunting Sweeney Todd. The Christopher Lee ghost is like taunting him and telling him to kill people. And then as the more people he kills, the more ghosts haunt him.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, I think that's
because
that's
they do mention like
idea,
the ghosts
think,
haunting
actually.
The streets and all
I
that.
I would love
so.
To see that on. I would love to see a production that does that, honestly.
Oh, that does it on stage. That'd be really cool.
That'd
instead
be
of
really
it just
cool.
being ensemble members.
It
is very akin to what they do in Merrily, the how did you get to be here?
Get to be here.
All those little, like, in the 1975 and singing all the years. But in that production, they have a lot of the actual characters or, like, side characters who pop in doing that. So that would be cool to see Sweeney Todd do that take. I think the only ones who kind of do it in the show would be, like, except for the finale, would be, like, what, Pirelli and...
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
Well, I love in the pro shot how they just kind of try to smudge away the blood and then they get up.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other crazy thing is that the movie has to kind of overcompensate. On stage, like the music is the stand-in for the gore that you can't really do. Like you could get like a bloody fake blood neck and drop the body. But like you can't do the real actual horror gore that you can do in a film. So I feel like it's like a trade-off. And I feel like the other trade-off, which I don't love, but again I get, is like how subtle and droll both Epiphany and a little priest are and I wanted them to be bigger, but
absolutely.
It doesn't make sense because a camera's in their face, so also Helena, I rooted for her, but she tried so hard
anyway.
Well, the thing is she wanted to be bigger. You can tell in the actual audio recording she wanted to play it bigger. She really wanted to play it bigger, and she recorded the songs bigger. And then when she gets to set, her husband or father of her children is like, no, that's not what we're doing here today.
No emotion.
All right, we got other songs we got to talk about. I'm the only one that's given a song so far.
Oh, God.
Oh, geez. wow. No, I, you know, you did.
No,
you
we did our songs.
Yeah.
Did we do it?
Jeez.
Did that happen?
Yeah. We just went on a tangent. We're done. We're just talking about Sweeney Todd for some reason.
We're done.
You know, everybody cut. Everybody dropped off the podcast like 5 minutes ago. We're just talking to ourselves.
Now we're just chatting like we always do. I'm keeping that in, though. That's good discussion.
Anyway.
Thank you guys for listening to the show. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher at Dear Friends Podcast, or on Twitter, Dear Friends Pod, Patreon. Just support us all on our individual Patreons. You'll get video episodes on any of us. If you follow any of us on Patreon, you'll get the video episodes. We're on Instagram's Dear Friend Pod. Email dearfriendspodcast@gmail.com in case you want to do it in a way that isn't the Google. Our show is an offshoot of Someone Else's Problem, created by Aaron Chalakian and Delaney Peterson, who gave us permission to outright steal their format, and we love them very much. All right, you guys, you have stuff you got to promote. Promote it out for the world to see.
Okay. I'm stealing focus on YouTube. I do musical theater history and things like that. I'm Emily A. B. Clark pretty much everywhere else. Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, all that jazz. So you can find me there.
Okay. And I'm at Musical Hell on YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr, Patreon, Facebook, and assorted various places on the internet.
And if you're not tired of hearing my voice yet, I have another podcast called Musicals with Cheese, also on the Broadway Podcast Network. And you can check that out, where I force my friend Andrew to watch musicals once a week. I'm sure we got some interesting stuff coming out in, like, November or whenever this episode's coming out. all right. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap this on up?
I'm glad we taught you kids how to not be on your high horse about Sondheim film adaptations.
Except for A Little Night Music, which is bad.
Oh, geez.
Oh, well, yeah, we don't talk about that one.
I've got videos about both of these, so I'm done.
Spoilers, I'm having one of these two on for A Little Night Music on Musicals with Cheese. I'm not sure. It'll all be based on schedule, but one of these people are going to be on for that.
You know, I just did a huge podcast where I talked about, not me, on...
cast.
The original cast, yes.
I know your life better than you, Emily.
I just can't like,
you, have
that,
you have to put both of us now on, or otherwise we're
no, no,
be
it'll be Christy. Emily's already talked about it. She lost her dibs.
Well, I need to come on and talk about something.
I know, you need to be back on our show soon. Hopefully soon. We'll talk.
Soon. Okay.
I promise. All right, guys. We'll see you next time on the Dear Friends Podcast. Cue the music.
Dear friends, spill your woes to your musical family. Dear friends, they will take your questions and turn them into nuggets of wisdom and anecdotes in an otherwise cynical world. Dear friends.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now And get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org. Because only together we rise.